Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century. All right, welcome back, folks. It's 13 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for being with us today. I appreciate your business. And as promised, we're visiting with our good friend, Gary Schilling. Let me tell you a little bit about him. In addition to being a member of the Small Business Advocate Brain Trust, for which we appreciate him agreeing to do that, Gary is the president of A. Schilling & Company, Incorporated, their economic consultants and investment strategists. Gary is well known for his forecasting record. He has been twice ranked as Wall Street's top economist by Institutional Investors Poll of Financial Institutions. Futures Magazine ranked him as the country's number one commodity trading advisor, and that happened in 1993. Gary holds an AB degree from Amherst College and a PhD from Stanford University. He's written quite a few books, but the one that we're going to talk about today, or we're going to use as our basis for our discussion, is his brand new book called Deflation: Why It's Coming, Whether It's Good or Bad, and How It Will Affect Your Investments, Business, and Personal Affairs. Gary, I'm out of breath. Welcome back.
Glad to be back, Jim.
It's good to have you with us, and I really appreciate you making the time. You know, the last time you were on was a very timely visit because people were really starting to talk about deflation. I mean, I've been mentioning it whenever I hear. Back in the spring, when I heard Secretary Rubin and Alan Greenspan use that word a time or two back in the spring, I started talking about this. I didn't know who you were. I didn't know anything about your book at that time, and I started saying, guys, you know, there are some deflationary forces out there. And then when I saw your book, I said, you know, we got to have this guy on the show because this is becoming more and more timely. And as I said, your last visit, people about the month of August, which was actually perfect timing for your book. People really started focusing on the impact of deflation, didn't they?
Well, I think we were very lucky. As a matter of fact, I really just put everything aside and took a whole winter to write the book, finished it the end of March, published in June, and, of course, things started coming unglued in July. But as far as I know, this is the first and the only book on deflation, and I felt it had a good enough chance of happening that I was willing to go to the extent of a 400-page book. In other words, if you think something may happen, but you put out a report for your clients, yeah, well, if you're right, fine, but it may be forgotten in 3 months. If you're wrong, you hope anyway. But when you write a book on something, you're really taking a stand. It's like a book I wrote in the early 80s when I first came up with the idea that inflation was unwinding, which turned out to be true, and figured that was worth putting in a book, and the same with deflation now.
Well, I'll tell you, I know that you've been thinking about this for a long time, and as a product of a generation that lived much of their life in an inflationary world, where especially back in the 70s when it was just rampant, deflation is a very odd thing to contemplate. And tell us about, kind of compare those two, compare the difference in inflation and deflation.
Deflation is really the flip side, the mirror image, the complete reverse, 180-degree turn from inflation. In inflation, and as you point out, the 70s, we had plenty of it, people buy ahead. They, in effect, say, prices are going up. I'm going to buy a house before it gets even more expensive, and I'll get in on future appreciation. I'll build up inventories in my business because I know they're going to cost me later. And, of course, that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because everybody does that. It strains capacity. Prices go up. Suspicions are confirmed, and people buy even more.
Mm-hmm.
Deflation, exactly the opposite. People say, hey, prices are going down. I don't want to hold any inventories.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to wait to buy a new car because I can get one cheaper later. And that backs up excess capacity to suppliers, and of those inventories to automakers, to car dealers. So what do? They cut prices to get rid of that excess capacity. Suspicions are confirmed, prices decline, and people say, I'll wait even further. So it has exactly the reverse image. And, of course, we haven't had any deflation since the 1930s, so virtually nobody in business today knows anything about it. They don't know how to react, and that's why this. I think this book was should be helpful to people, because it really it and you know, I think we're going to talk about this later. There's an 18-point a business strategy that really says, hey, here's what you do in a deflationary environment if you're running a business.
Exactly, and that's and folks, that's the reason why I not only wanted Gary to be with us earlier when he was with us earlier in the a couple of months ago and today, but also to agree to become part of our brain trust, which means that he'll be a regular guest on the show to help us understand all this. You know, Gary, there's good inflation and bad inflation, and there's good deflation and bad deflation. And good inflation is when your real estate that you own goes up, and when your wages go up. But when your gasoline goes up, and when your food goes up, that's good inflation and bad inflation. And there's good deflation and bad deflation too, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, and this is an important distinction, because when most people hear the word deflation, they think of the 1930s, and prices did decline during the early 30s, 32% wholesale price decline. But that was the bad deflation, which was touched off by financial crisis. It was financial crisis that led to deflation, not the other way around, because what happened was that we had the panic in Wall Street, widespread bankruptcies, layoffs, people on short hours, and as a result, wages, incomes collapsed, and so did purchasing power demand. In other words, you can get to deflation one of two ways, because deflation is an excess of supply over demand. It's no more complicated than that. I mean,
right.
Economists are good at making complex air out of simple truth, but the simple truth is it's excess demand, and in the 30s, it was a collapse in demand that led to the deflation.
Right.
Now, the good deflation, we've seen two examples of that. One was the late 1900s, and that was driven by huge increases in supply. The Industrial Revolution was in full flower in this country. We went from cottage industries to full-blown production and things like steel, cement, glass, farm implements, and the like. And the other thing was the railroad crisscrossed the country, opened up huge new supplies of agriculture products and minerals.
Stand by, Gary. We're going to have to take a break. Folks, it's 20 after the hour. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some more good and bad deflation and 18 points, 18 elements for business strategy in the face of deflation. All right, we're back, folks. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, a small business advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Gary Schilling. He's the author of an excellent book that I recommend to you. It's a one-of-a-kind, folks. It's called Deflation, Why It's Coming, Whether It's Good or Bad, How It Will Affect Your Investments, Business, and Personal Affairs. Gary, tell us where they can get your book.
Well, you can get it through Amazon.com online. You can get it through many bookstores, Barnes & Noble, Borders, and so on. They may not necessarily have it in stock, but they can order it for you. Or you can get it from the publisher, Lakeview Publishing, and I'll give you the toll-free number.
Sure.
It's 888-346-7444.
Go ahead and leave it again.
It's, 888-346-7444.
Right, and the price is
$16.
$16, and it's
cheap.
It's
deflationary price.
That's right. It's a great value. It used to be $19, right? Hey, Gary, let's finish up talking about the about good deflation and bad deflation. You know, one of the things that you were finishing a story. Do you remember where you
were?
Well,
all I was saying is that we had the good deflation of excess supply. And really driven by new technologies in the late 1800s, and the same was true in the 1920s. The Roaring Twenties were deflationary, but the economy was being driven by, again, the new technologies of the day,
right,
which were electrification of not only factories, but houses and all the appliances that went with it, but also automobiles, and again, that brought in roads, bridges, etc. Now, I think that's the kind of deflation we're facing now, because I don't see financial crisis in the West. We have plenty in Asia, but I don't think we're going to see it spreading to North America and Europe. I don't see huge financial imbalances that are all that susceptible.
Right.
There are a couple of caveats. All the derivative problems in Wall Street, these very exotic kind of leverage plays. And
a long-term capital situation.
Yeah, that's a long-term capital management problem, and who knows how big that is. And the other caveat is protectionism, and I must say, the withdrawal from free markets of countries like Malaysia and Hong Kong and Russia and so on is not a good sign, but I'm assuming that's not going to go blow up.
Right.
But I don't see the financial crisis, but I do see supply driven by two factors. One is the new technologies, which are now big enough that they've been growing rapidly for years, but now they're big enough they're starting to push the overall economy. And these are things, of course, like semiconductors, computers, biotechnology, telecommunications. And the other thing that's going on, of course, is we've exported the Industrial Revolution to the rest of the world because capital and technology are free to roam the world looking for the lowest cost site of production.
Right.
And we're importing the low-cost product that comes out of that. So It's, I think, more supply-driven than demand-constrained.
Another thing that's good deflation is deregulation. Earlier this week, we talked with someone about the deregulation of electricity. We had a gentleman on talking to us about that, and that's good deflation, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And we're seeing deregulation. Well, we've had a long string of it in the U.S. going back to 1975 with freeing up of commissions on Wall Street, and then airlines, trucking, banking sector, now the electricity. And we're seeing it abroad. Japan has in effect deregulated their financial structure. Airlines are being deregulated on a global basis. So it is, and of course it's a very, very deflationary force because it subjects these industries to the bracing winds of competition.
That's right. And that's the reason why it's good deflation. And what happens is it's survival of the fittest. You know,
absolutely.
Which is the way the marketplace ought to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Gary, let's get into Chapter 28, something I want to make sure we cover today, and that is business strategies for deflation. You've got 18 elements that you talk about in your book, and I'd like to cover as many of those as we can today.
Sure. Well, let's go through them briefly, and I think they're all worth mentioning to our small business listeners. First is to continue to cut costs and push productivity. Restructuring is absolutely necessary, and particularly in a deflationary environment where competition is going to do nothing but get tougher domestically and globally. And even companies that don't think they have foreign exposure, I mean, they probably have some of their customers that do. The second one is anticipate deflation. Now, this means what you need to do is you've got to wait before you've got to wait for lower prices before you invest. You shouldn't be building capacity that you don't need because you may be able to buy the equipment cheaper. You should press your suppliers, look for lower prices. This is an environment where they're going to be forced to do that, and you're going to need to force them to do it because your customers are going to push you for lower prices.
Exactly. Gary, stand by. I want to talk about that some more when we come back. We're going to continue with the 18 elements of business strategies for deflation for small businesses, and it's a chapter just for small business owners, folks. It's 29 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and our special guest is Gary Schilling, the author of an excellent book called Deflation. Stay with us. All right, welcome back, heroes. It's 33 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Gary Schilling. Gary Schilling is the author of Deflation, Why It's Coming, Whether It's a Good or Bad, How It Will Affect Your Investments, Business, and Personal Affairs. It's an excellent book that I recommend to you folks, even if you have a little teeny tiny small business. Or if you have a $50 million distribution company, you need to be reading about deflation. And the quintessential book, at least at this point in time, is this book that Gary has written, and I recommend it to you. It's available in bookstores. It's also available online. And we're going to give the 800 number out again if you want to contact Gary's employer in just a few minutes. But right now, Gary, let's get back into we've been talking about what you call the 18 elements of business strategies for deflation.
Right. We covered the first two. Number three is avoid excess capacity. When you've got slower demand growth, as you will in deflation, it's primarily excess supply, but demand will slow, particularly with consumers shifting from being big borrowers and spenders to savers. I think that you need to obviously avoid excess capacity. It can kill you. And number four is keep inventory slimmer than bare bones. Interest rates are going to decline, but relative to inflation, they'll be higher than they've been in the post-war period. Post-war period, they were abnormally low, adjusted for inflation, but they're going to be higher back back in the days when we did have deflation as a regular feature of peacetime years.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is that inventories are very, very expensive when you've got interest rates which are relatively high and they are declining in price. It's the opposite of inflation.
Right.
Number five, emphasize new technology.
You know, one of the things, before you go on to number five, yeah. I wanted to point out that there are small businesses out there that part of their inventory, maybe even a large part of their inventory, for example, electrical supply companies, a large part of their inventory is made up of copper and aluminum, and which are commodities. And as those,
right.
as you know, and as we, most of us know, commodity prices have been coming down, haven't they?
Well, that's right. And a company can get hit twice because they've got the inventories. They take a loss on as prices go down. So and then if they in effect are forced to reflect market prices, which are declining in their selling prices, they've got to mark down what they sell, and they're sitting here with an inventory loss. So obviously you want to keep inventories bare bones.
And the way to solve that problem is to work very closely with your suppliers, so that you're implementing for your customers and from your suppliers, from your vendors, just-in-time inventory.
Oh, absolutely. And as I say, that was number three, or number two, anticipate deflation. You've got to be lean on your suppliers because your customers are going to lean on you. Well, let's move on here.
Okay, number five.
Number four is emphasize new technologies, not old. The old technologies are the kind of things where people are going to wait to buy them because they don't change in form or substance. Cars don't change that much over time. You can buy one in 6 months, prices will be lower in deflation, so you wait. But new technologies, things like semiconductors and telecommunications and the like, they have three interesting features. One is they already know what deflation is. Computer prices are declining about 25% a year.
Right.
Secondly, they increase demand. I mean, cars are now loaded with computer chips because they're so cheap. There weren't any there 20 years ago. And third, obsolescence is so great because of technological rapid change that you can't wait even though prices will decline. In other words, you can't wait to buy a new PC next year even though you'll get more computer power per buck because the technology means that yours will be obsolete long since.
That's exactly
so the new technologies have a lot of attraction, particularly in a period of deflation relative to the old technologies. Number five here is go for volume. If you've got prices declining, the only way you're going to increase your overall sales and bottom line is obviously to increase volume. You can't rely on prices. And seven, develop.
One of the things, Gary, if I can interrupt you
sure.
for a second, one of the ways to do that is through consolidation, and that's what's going on in the major companies around the globe, and it's also trickling down and happening more and more. The roll up, the consolidation factor in businesses, and that's by they get two benefits from that. They increase their volume and they lower their operating expenses.
Oh sure, and that's a very good point. You don't have to go out and create new volume from scratch. You can in fact get it through a merger and acquisition, and as you say, cut out the overhead and kill two birds with one stone.
So if you're out there, folks, trying to figure out how to follow Gary's instruction of go for volume, which I agree with him. One of the best ways is to look around at your marketplace, look around at your adjoining marketplace,
right.
See if there is a fit somewhere, either some kind of an alliance that you could develop or maybe an actual acquisition.
Yep.
All right, keep going.
Okay, seven is, let me cover seven and eight together because they're similar. Seven is develop proprietary products, and eight is explore niche businesses. Proprietary products, obviously, that gets you out of the onslaught of competition, and niche businesses, the same kind of thing. If you can find some particular component that nobody else makes and it isn't worth large companies bothering with, hey, you can carve out a great business and really be out of the eye of the hurricane.
That's the opposite of the commodity.
You bet.
Mm-hmm.
And so that brings us to number nine, which is in commodity businesses, you got to be the low-cost producer or you got to get out. The point is, and a lot of times this means you got to move operations to very cheap areas, often offshore, because technology and capital are freely transferable. It's only labor and transportation costs that count anymore. And so you got to be the low-cost producer, and maybe that means you ought to get out unless you want to move overseas.
Right. Gary, stand by. We've got to take a break, folks. We're visiting with Gary Schilling, the author of Deflation, an excellent book I recommend to you. And we're talking about 18 elements of business strategy for small business owners in the face of deflation. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, we're back, folks. It's 44 after the hour, and we're visiting with our good friend Gary Schilling. He is the author of an excellent book called Deflation, which I recommend to you, folks. It's something that you need to have on your desk. I think it will really help you, especially into the next year or two as we go into to some very uncertain global economic times and in the face of a lot of deflation, good and bad. Gary, let's get back into your business strategies for deflation. There are 18 of them, and we're on number 10.
We're on number 10. Okay, number 10. Get into productivity enhancing businesses. This is productivity enhancement. Everybody is going to go for this, restructuring, cost cutting, or whatever you want to call it. And anything you can provide somebody else, high tech, low tech, no tech, if you can figure out some way to help somebody else cut their costs, whether it's reorganizing it, giving them better furniture that cuts down on their office size, a whole host of things. It doesn't have to be high tech.
Okay.
Number 11, watch out for protectionism. This is a growing feature. We've seen the underdeveloped countries, because they have so much problems, they're withdrawing from free markets. And the risk is that when the Western countries experience recession, which could be next year, that they blame it on foreigners and get more protectionists. This is a threat. I heard on the radio this morning that in Britain that a big supermarket chain is only selling British lamb because the farmers are depressed as opposed to New Zealand lamb. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a protectionist measure. Watch out for that stuff.
Well, you know, in the face of the way the marketplace is going these days and the globalization of everything, how could you even be talking about protectionism?
Well, that's the point, that it isn't, everybody hates it, but if, when you see what happened with Malaysia stopping capital flows, I mean, the money's fine coming in, but they didn't want to let it out of the Roach Motel, Hong Kong fiddling with markets, Russia defaulting, Latin America putting on protectionist measures, and then they were endorsed by the top government people in France, Germany, and the UK. That's a forerunner. You got to be careful.
Right.
Anyway,
in the long view, aren't these growing pains basically?
Well, they're growing pains, but they may be very tough. Remember that protectionism is the normal way the world works. It's very rare to have free trade.
Mm-hmm.
Only two instances in history of the last 500 years, once when the British ran the world in the 19th century and when we've run it since World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to have one nation that has free trade in its best interest, but otherwise it's protectionism.
All right.
Well, let's press on here.
Okay.
Number 12 is be prepared for more competitive devaluations. China might devalue. That could touch off another round in Asia. Brazil is a very, very difficult situation, and devaluation may come out of that. And so if you have any involvement abroad, you've got to watch that one very closely. Number 13, very important for small businesses, stick to businesses you know. Don't get too adventuresome. That's always, I think, a good thing to know, but particularly in times of deflation, because competition is tough. You get into some other business, you're going to be going against guys who know a lot more about it than you do.
Right.
Emphasize customer service is number 14. Again, that's a way of offsetting competitive pressures and particularly deflationary pressures. If you're in tight because you're giving so much service that the guy couldn't even think of using some other supplier, hey, you can ride out a lot of difficult times.
Value added,
clearly, pure and simple.
We spend a lot of time talking about that on this show. A lot of my guests, we focus on that because more and more, Gary, everything that we have is a commodity almost.
Absolutely.
And the difference is how you deliver it.
That's how you can offset it.
Yeah.
Number 15, share company risk with employees and pay more from the bottom line. This is very, very important. You should rely more on bonuses, on pay for performance, for productivity improvement, and so on. Don't get your salaries up, because if you've got a mechanism for paying large amounts that basically adjusts with the fortunes of the company, then you're not going to face a difficult problem of actually cutting wages and salaries, which is very, very tough. It's psychologically almost impossible to do. But if you're paying from the bottom line, in effect, hey, you're sharing the risk with your employees. If you do well, they do well. If you don't do so hot, at least you don't have that huge problem of big layoffs or pay cuts, which are both of which are very traumatic.
Another thing, Gary, in this day and time when it's hard to find good employees, maybe you could negotiate some productivity terms with your employees. So,
well, that's right. And, of course, right now labor markets are drum tight, so it's a difficult situation. But the last thing you want to do is get yourself locked into high fixed wages and salaries at a time when I think we're at the peak of the economy and probably going to see slipping in the next year and
right.
deflation.
All right.
Okay. Build financial strength. Fortress balance sheets are the way to go. Particularly when they're facing tough times and deflation, they simply put you in a position. If you do need to borrow and you got that strong balance sheet, banks will listen to you. If you can't borrow, you got something to rely on.
Right.
17 is adapt to higher real interest rates. What I mean by that is inflation-adjusted interest rates are going to be higher than they have been, and that means your borrowing costs are going to be higher. So, again, you want to hold off on borrowing.
All right, Gary, stand by. We've got to take a break. Folks, we've got one more, number 18 coming up, and then we're going to ask Gary in the last segment what he thinks about some of the most recent activities that have been going on around the world and in this country. We'll be right back with Gary Schilling. My name is Jim Blassingame. I'm the Small Business Advocate. It's 50 after. Come on back. All right, we're back, folks, and we're visiting with our good friend Gary Schilling. He's the author of an excellent book that I recommend to you. You need to go find this book, folks. It's called Deflation, Why It's Coming, Whether It's Good or Bad, and How It Will Affect Your Investments, Your Business, and Your Personal Affairs. It's available in bookstores. It's available online and at this 800 number.
888-346-7444.
And if you need to get in touch with Gary or find out how to get the book, you can email me, and I'll make sure you do that. Gary, we were down to number 18, and then I've got some questions for you.
Yeah, 18 is, and this is particularly if you're a larger business where you are a public company, it's wait to issue bonds and float stocks yesterday. Most borrowing is done, particularly bond borrowing, where you're locked into interest rates for a while, is done before interest rates hit their bottom. I think we're going to see probably another 200 basis points decline in long treasury bonds from about 5% to 3%, comparable declines in other bond yields. And you wait, and you, because you know if you borrow now, you're going to lock yourself into rates that are not good, that are going to be punishingly high in relation to what you can pass through in your price increases, which will probably be more like price declines
yep.
in the deflation ahead. And as far as stocks, well, I wrote this last spring, published it last spring before stocks started down. But even today, and of course the IPO market is virtually dried up. So,
exactly.
But if it ever saw the light of day, and you got a chance to issue stock, and you need money, I'd do it. I'd take any opportunity.
Right. Gary, thank you very much for sharing those 18 business strategies on deflation for small businesses. I have a couple of questions.
We've
just got a couple of minutes or so. Tell us your thoughts on what the Fed did recently in cutting rates mid-meeting.
Well, they obviously sense that there are big problems out there, and they're trying to at least be even with the game. But in my view, interest rate declines are by the Fed don't do much good. Because when you have deflation, everybody's got enough capacity. It's hard to unleash demand that is already satiated. So although stocks got very excited about this yesterday, I don't think it's really going to do much good in the final analysis.
Well, many people are anticipating additional cuts.
Well, additional cuts, but again, you look at Japan. Their interest rates have gone from overnight rates have gone from 8% to 0.25%
right.
in this decade, and stocks are down 2/3, and the economy is dead in the water. It's actually in recession again. In deflation, interest rate cuts don't do much good. It's what's called the liquidity trap. It's the pushing on a string. You know, you
right.
can pull on the string to tighten monetary policy, but if you push on it, nothing happens.
Well, what should we do?
Well, I think you've simply got to be very, very cautious and expect that the economy is going to soften from here. And as I say, we've gone through these 18 business strategies for deflation, and I start implementing them now.
What about a recession? You see a recession in 99?
Yeah, I think so. If stocks continue down on balance, and I think they will, it's going to destroy so much of the appreciation that consumers have been relying on in place of saving for early retirement, to put the kids through college, to support high levels of spending. That, I think, is going to cause people eventually to say, this isn't working. my stocks are no longer going to do the job. I'm going to have to save. And when they do, and I think this may be roughly the middle of next year, but that's an educated guess, we'll see consumers that control about three-quarters of total economic activity in this country. They pull in their horns. Then I think we will see the economy move into recession, probably in the second half of next year.
Right. Gary, thank you very much. You've just done an absolutely yeoman's job today helping us understand deflation and introducing us again to your book called Deflation. And I appreciate you being with us. Looking forward to having you back again.
Jim, it's always a great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Folks, that's Gary Schilling. He's the author of Deflation. It's an excellent book. I recommend you find it and find out what Gary has to say about deflation. I got to wrap things up right now. Before I do, I want to thank someone who's very important to the show, John Leet. Stand up and take a bow.
Thank you, Jim.
I appreciate you, sir. I also want to thank the most important members of this show, my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.